All right. We're going to get going again. Back up and running again. All right, next up on the agenda is the adoption of the agenda, as luck would have it. Okay, we have one addenda, volunteers, additional volunteers on item 20, and one more student teacher on 21.
Scratch the high point.
Scratch the high point report, which is
high point report number
5-2.
Scott never let us down on that.
That's right.
Hard promise, Scott.
All right. So if there's no other changes,
we're all about blowing up bridges, aren't we?
Changes, additions, comments. I need a motion to accept the agenda and the addenda, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Frazier.
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
That would be good.
And Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, curriculum department.
You want public?
That's left. That's next.
I don't know who wants to go first, but Greg or Yvonne and Carla. We've worked, actually starting last May when we started getting some preliminary information. We worked on our local report card. And I just want folks to, number one, to kind of dive into the data like we're diving into it and take a look at kind of where we are. I mean, we've grown. There's disappointment by not hitting the excellence mark. We hit it, actually, but then that took the kids away from us, and we didn't. So, but you need to see how that all flows in here and kind of what our issues are as we approach not only the 100 performance index, but also the value-added index, which the value-added is the higher you are, the more that's expected, the harder it is to exceed. So when you see districts that are low performing, it's pretty easy for them to hit and exceed their value added because their expectation is not as high, if that makes sense. So let's run through that, because our goal, flat out, is to be excellent or excellent with distinction. Flat out, that's our goal. And if we're not hitting that, we haven't hit our goal. And as I go through this and we talk about this, we're not excuse making. We just want you to kind of see kind of what our data is. So, Greg or whoever wants to start.
The first thing is that the local report card has 26 state indicators. That's how you, the main way you get your ranking of excellent with distinction, effective, continuous improvement, academic emergency, or watch, and then academic emergency. Of those 26, year before there were 30 indicators. They took four of those away, and we'll see a little bit where those were, but of the 26 total indicators, 24 are tests. 3rd through 8th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, and then two of them, and there's two test areas at some grades, there's three at other areas, and there's five at 10th and 11th. And then there's the two bottom ones there that are non-test areas, attendance rate and graduation rate. And all of the standard you have to achieve on 20 of the 24, or 19 of the 24 indicators, is have 75% of your students proficient or higher to achieve that indicator. The 11th grade graduation test, because it kids who have taken it in 10th grade and now are repeating it, that goes up to 85%. So if we go to, this is how we actually did. You look at 3rd grade, there were two indicators, 4th grade, two indicators, 5th grade, etc. Science, they took away social studies at 5th grade. That was one of the ones that they took away.
And writing.
And writing.
At 4th and
and seventh, fourth and seventh.
And eighth grade took away social studies also. The two indicators, we got 24 out of 26 indicators. The two we didn't get were fifth grade reading, fifth grade science. We've already begun to initiate some things that we're going to work on to address those, and I'll talk about those here in a minute. What I put here was the ones in green are the ones we hit. The other two there are the ones we didn't get. I just put the state averages out there as a comparison.
So the state average on the slide before that, graduation rate was 90.
That's the standard. Yeah. What the state actually averaged was.
Okay.
In order to hit the standard, you have to be 90 or above.
Okay.
Well, yeah, you got to get 90 or above to hit the standard.
Okay.
And at 10 to 3, you have to be 93 or above.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
On the fifth grade reading, what were the test scores of those students in the fourth grade?
They passed. It was very high, actually.
It was an 80-something.
80-something percent.
So they lost that much
in fourth grade.
Well, yes and no. That's what we ask ourselves. Are they losing that much, or what's going on? Number one, fifth grade, if you take a look at it statewide, it is the hardest test of all of them. Why? And lots of folks are asking that question. What's going on at that level? Because the standard score, even to get there, is about 10 points higher than what you see in the other averages. So something's going on within that fifth grade test statewide. So,
but
with that known, we still have, if we have 80-some percent of our kids in third grade and 85% of our kids in fourth grade, and then it dips to 69% in fifth grade, what can we do? What are we going to have to do to get those kids that passed before over that hump?
But we actually dropped by like 10 points from last year, did we not?
We normally see about a 10-point drop at fifth grade statewide. That statewide fifth grade test is just, as Larry said, it's not a great test.
Oh.
And the state's aware of that. We've already
Yeah, but we did dip.
But I'm saying from last year, we actually passed that last year.
Yeah, but it's a whole different group of kids.
I got that.
We did, yes. And we've already started a longitudinal study or 3-year trend data to look to answer your question, is to look at third, fourth, and then those cohorts of 2008, 2009, 2010, and then also to see if the scores. We had a State Department, Kurt Taube came up and worked with us, and we have a band of scores that will give us a 50% and a 75% prediction of passage of the fifth grade score. So that's a new way for us to look at that, looking at third and fourth grade data, and then as they go into fifth.
Now, was it basically the same test this year as it was last year?
Well, the same indicators, however, the test questions, or there's a bank of test questions,
right.
So sometimes they could be stuck
right.
in one way or
another. It just kind of, it really sticks out. You wonder, how do we fall off a cliff
exactly
like that?
Exactly what we're
asking. I'm sure that didn't escape you.
We have a number of studies underway.
Okay.
Same with science. Science is the first year it's tested at fifth grade.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, we're looking at curricularly, how are we really building those kids to that level? Because that's not a test of science just at fifth grade. That's a test of science backwards.
Plus, I think science is that test would have to be a little bit harder than a reading.
It's a content test with a lot of reading comprehension in it.
Now, I don't want to jump ahead, but we also have missed our value added for reading in fifth grade for the last couple of years.
And he'll talk about that when he gets a little further.
I don't know, because you've had that framework in place for reading instruction and whatnot for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something in the fifth grade level, I'm sure you're asking yourself, is there something there, because we turn it up at fourth grade, they're very high. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden,
and it's a combination of a lot of things. We've talked to the guys at Battelle, who are very key in the value added.
Right. Yeah.
And he's very blunt with me, very incredibly blunt with me, that it's hard to measure value added when the fourth grade test, standard score wise, is so much easier than the fifth grade test, because their value added falls off the cliff statewide in reading, and some of those fifth grade scores throughout the state, not just here. And a lot, most districts are not hitting their value added at fifth grade.
So are they able to predict how our fifth graders would have done this year?
We're just now looking at, it's a new way to look at
it. I mean, I'd be right. Are they going to use historical data for that?
Well, yes. Linear regression.
You mean the value added?
Yeah.
And linear regression. Well,
yeah, I would be curious to see if they would actually have predicted what we got.
They do predict. They don't. They do not predict what your percentages will be. They give a prediction for each individual kid.
Right.
To see whether they met it or not, to give you that year's growth that they count for value added. But they don't tell you what that prediction was for the kid.
I see.
We can go back and figure it now. Like, we can look at in fourth grade, let's say, the beginning score in a linear regression for 50% prediction of passage. Say it's 406. So we'll go back and look at those kids 405 and below, and take a look at that according to that data that we now can use.
And then, does that low score feed into next year's sixth grade reading test? Mm-hmm. Or are they all of a sudden going to recover?
That's one of the things that we're looking at also in this study. And the one other thing I'll mention now while we're on it.
Sorry.
Is we're going to, for a number of years, have received resources from Honda to implement. And we recently implemented a lot of quality circles. And we initiated Freshman Focus, and we initiated a number of other, the attendance issue at the high school that we've had great results with. And we're going to put a quality circle on this situation, too, because we have some resources from Honda, again, not as much as we used to, but enough to get this going. So the one thing I wanted to talk about briefly, very brief before I go on, is, we did not hit excellent. You needed 25 out of 26 at a minimum. But, to me, look at many of the numbers. Look at how high these high school scores are compared to state averages. We had a problem in fifth grade in two content areas. Other than that, we did incredibly well in all the other areas. So, I'll keep moving here. The other way, and this can get a little complicated, but the other way that you get a rating is if you get performance index score. Performance index score weights it based upon how many kids do get advanced scores versus accelerated scores versus proficient versus basic versus limited versus untested. You get 1.2 points, essentially, per kid for advanced, 1.1 for accelerated, 1 for proficient, 0.6 for basic, and 0.3. And I'll show you the formula here in a minute. So if every kid in the district, 100% of your kids scored advanced, you'd get 120 points on the state, on the performance index. 100 points or higher, you get an excellent rating. So you can either get 25 or 26 out of 26, or you can get 100 or more on the performance index, and that gives you an excellent rating also. And that's one of the things we spent a lot of time on. Mm. Very, very concentrated time on this summer, because one of the things you want to look at, this is how they calculate the performance index. You look at, in Marysville schools, there were 7,382 test opportunities for kids in 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 10th grade. They count on the performance index. They don't count 11th grade results on the performance index. So you had 7,382 test opportunities. But this is what the state final results were. You simply take the number of here, divide it by this, multiply it times 100. This is that percentage that you come out with. That's the weight they give it. Zero if they're untested, 0.3 for limited, etc. You get multiply all those together, get these points, and it adds up to 99.8 in our case. Remember, you needed 100. They also don't round up from the 10th. They round up from the 100th position. And that's actually like 99.8337 something, I think. These 15 kids, not, and I keep confusing it, it's not 15 kids, it's 15 total test opportunities. We could figure that out exactly who that and what it was. Three of them were unscorable tests that from alternate assessment with special ed kids. Five of them were a student who was in Indiana for cancer treatment.
Who has since passed away.
And just passed away. Four of them were another student.
But unable to test.
Yeah. And they give you a medical waiver for that, for those scores, but they still count them in the denominator. And three of them were a student who moved to Marion from Creekview that did not get coded correctly in the database. Down here, this is what I was actually on vacation in Maine, and Larry and I were swapping emails, and I was calculating these numbers trying to figure out if we were going to make it or not. And when we got the numbers corrected, these are the numbers that I believed we were going to come up with. And you can see it actually comes out to 99.97 something, which rounds up to 100. Well, what happens though on alternate assessment scores, and, you know, the kids, the special ed kids who are through their IEPs are deemed unable to take regular tests or alternately assessed, you can only count 1% of those scores towards your accountability. That was 30, we tested 35 kids, I believe it was, alternate assessment. We were allowed to count 29 of their scores. Now, the argument is we tested too many kids, but the state tells you, you don't determine how many kids you alternately assess by how many you get to count, it's by what's appropriate for that kid. And so, and up until this year, they've always let you request a waiver from more than 1%. This year, they implemented a new rule that said, if you have 1,000 or more kids tested, you can't ask for a waiver. It's set at 1%. That's how it is. So when the scores came back and we were at 99.8, you can see we lost 6 kids from advanced because I had them at 1887. What they do is they take those kids' scores and bump them back to basic. So you can see our basic score went up by 14. Our proficient stayed the same because every one of our alternately assessed kids either scored accelerated or advanced except for the 3 unscorable ones. So they took 6 from here and 5, or I'm sorry, 8 from accelerated and moved them down to basic, and that ended up, we were at 99.8.
So a matter of 14 tests bumped our district rating by 1.
Mm-hmm. So, that's amazing. Probably more than you really care.
Well, and
I mean, that's razor's edge.
And again, and the kids performed.
Right. Yeah, they got, it's not like.
It's not as though they didn't. They performed better than what you got credit for.
Right.
That's.
Okay. Another thing we're pretty proud of, at least I am, is that our performance index scores over time. You know, in 06, 07, we were at 96.5, and we've gone up, and last year we were at 99.8. This is how you get your ratings. Again, you can get 25 out of, or 26, or 94%. The reason you'll see this percentage more often than not is because they keep changing the number of indicators. And they always fall back on the percentage to figure out how many you need to get there. So 25 or 26, 94% or more, 100 to 120 gets you excellent. Notice that's preliminary, because preliminary you get that rating, and then if value added, show you in a minute, you can get bumped up or bumped down. Our indicators, we had 24 or 92.3%. Our performance index, 99.8. We ended up with a preliminary rating of effective. Then you get to value added. In value added 07, we were, the plus means that we kids achieved more than what was expected.
But go back, now go back to the slide real quick. The other one, right there. Now you can see, you know, that the we're moving up. So again, you got a plus for when you're moving, and but as you get closer to the dock, closer to the
harder to move.
It's harder to gain value added. Right. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
As Larry was talking about with value added, Jim Mahoney, who heads Patel, who he was referring to before. Was talked to us a lot when we used to be in part of Project SOAR, which was kind of the precursor to value added at the state level. They used a lot more test history, Terra Novas, et cetera, so they were able to get a much more precise prediction on kids' scores. And their argument and their concern all along, even when you used all those tests, was is there enough stretch at the top of the test to allow a hit kid who scores very high to score high enough to get to get more than what was expected.
Yeah, if you're an A+ AP student, how do you grow above expected growth the next year?
And the argument was that, and his one thing he still says is now because the state doesn't count any turnover or anything; it's only state assessments. Whether the state, the big argument, whether the state tests have enough stretch at that top end to allow districts who scored high previously to get, you know, more than what was expected out of those kids again. So anyway, we had plus and plus. That's why we got bumped last year, because if you get 2 years in a row of what's more than expected, you get bumped up. If you get 3 years in a row of less than what's expected, they knock you down a score. This year we did not get bumped up because we met what was expected, but we didn't exceed it. And it's only grades, value added is only done for grades 4 through 8. They need previous year's test history, and in 10th grade they don't take any tests in 9th grade. Mm-hmm. One of the other things that we're pretty proud of also is the building level performance. The buildings, Edgewood, when you get down to the building level, they obviously don't have as many indicators. They have two third grade tests, 2 fourth grade tests, and attendance. So they Edgewood 5 out of 5, which automatically made them excellent. They got a performance index score of 100. They were above value added, so therefore they got excellent, and then value added bump, and this was their second year in a row of value added above. So they're excellent with distinction. And, you know, I could read all those to you, but you can do that as easy as I can. You can see that four buildings made excellent with distinction. 5 buildings made the highest rating they can get, because the high school cannot get excellent with distinction because there's no value added score to pump them up. So 5 out of 8 got the highest.
And we're proud to say this is Raymond's third consecutive mm-hmm. year. That is excellent with distinction, and that's, we're pretty proud of that.
The last thing here, the last thing I'm going to talk about here with this is AYP, Adequate Yearly Progress. And that's the No Child Left Behind. You got 10 subgroups of students, which are these, that you have to meet targets at. And that's, again, No Child Left Behind, and that's why they break out the kids into these subgroups. In the past, the subgroups that we had enough kids, because you had to have 30 kids or more to get counted, were all students, white, non-Hispanic, economically disadvantaged, and students with disabilities. This year, we had enough to have black, non-Hispanic, Asian, Pacific Islander, multiracial. Now, we have barely enough, but we have enough that those count also. The what was I going to say? There's four ways you can meet AYP. Okay, there's a target score. Oh, I know what it was. The state, to make adequate your 2013-14, the federal government said every kid has to pass, no matter what. You got to be at 100%. So the state started, and I think it was about 2004, 6, something, 2 maybe, and said, where are we at right now? In some testing areas, it was 30% passage. In other areas, it was higher. And then they set that floor, and they set 100, and they started stair-stepping it up. Okay? So those targets, and that's the first thing they look at. They say, okay, how many students with disabilities, what percentage of those kids passed? And you look, and did they meet the target? And I'll show you the targets here in just a second. Another, okay, if you didn't make it that way, then they look at your two-year combined results. They took how you did last year, how you did this year, combine them. If that makes it, then you make AYP. 3, safe harbor, which is the way most, those last two, mostly safe harbor, is going to be a way that you make AYP, and that is if you reduce the percentage that failed by 10%. So if 60% passed, 40% failed, if you knock that down, only 36% fail next year, you reduce that 40 by 10%, then you make AYP through what they call safe harbor. The growth model, and a lot of people confuse the growth model with value added, they do a prediction based on the kid's previous test scores and say if that kid is going to, if they're predicting he'll be proficient or she will be proficient within 2 years, then you get to count them now. I've asked for that formula, and it seems to be some secret, kind of like Colonel Sanders' chicken, Kentucky Fried Chicken recipe. I don't know if anybody knows what it is. It's impossible to calculate and predict it. But those are the four ways. These are the AYP targets, and the biggest reason I put this up here was because you can see, obviously, and they're all at 100%. I had just left the State Department when they worked on the No Child Left Behind plan, and was actually talking to Roger Nelms, who was deputy superintendent at the State Department when they did work on it. And then he was Hilliard superintendent, went to State Department, then he was interim at Dublin, I believe, for a while. And he said when they developed this, they had no intention of it ever coming to fruition, because they know that no one will ever get to 100%. It's the old rule I've heard Larry refer to numerous times, saying, you know, every kid, no matter what, has to run 100-yard dash in 10 and a half seconds. Doesn't matter if they started the year at 30 seconds and ran it 10.6 by the end of the year. Sorry, they didn't get 10 and a half. You know, it's not how much they grew. It was simply you didn't jump across the bar.
Are you seeing more districts this year not make their AYP?
Oh, absolutely.
So, and I would assume next year that trend.
Well, look at those scores. Reading this year is now, you have to take the kids who, in many cases, are the hardest, most expensive to educate, and more of them have to pass than your regular kids. That's 77%.
And your regular
ed. Regular ed, 75,
yeah.
Yeah. 80 for these are the subgroups.
80.6 at reading, 79 at eighth grade reading. And then next year, you can see all but this one and this one. I guess there's three of them are above 75. So, yes, if they don't change it, what will happen is everybody will be in school improvement status. No one will make it. It's just impossible.
Right.
Unless you don't have enough kids to count. And that will be the only districts probably that will make it, is the ones who don't have enough kids in those subgroups to count.
Right.
And then the last thing, and I think this depressed Larry as much as anything.
Is a conversation I've had with
6 indicators,
several folks, that, you know, I hear a lot about, you know, you read in the paper who's excellent, and
and you really wonder what it means anymore, because you have a school district up there, right there, that hit 6 indicators. We hit 24. But yet they're rated excellent. You have a lot of school districts. You just list them all there. I mean, it's pretty incredible, but they've met one of the criteria, and that
they've
puts
all
them,
they all 90 met, or above.
They met 90 or above on the performance index, and then they hit value added because they got more room for growth on
I'm
value
about
added.
To say, it seems that this report card is built to show lower performing schools grow faster or perform better students than higher performing.
I don't know. Again, this is frustrating, and this needs to be an item that's discussed by the rulemakers, because it needs changed. I don't argue that we all need to be measured, but pretty soon the measurement. What are you measuring, and what's the outcome of that?
It makes you wonder what excellent means.
It does.
If you look at the history.
If that's an excellent school district, I'm still not sure I'd put my kid there.
Which I remember way back when it was just indicators. Yeah. And of course Columbus Public and the eight urbans were saying, whoa, this really hurts us, And so then they went to looking at other, and then of course the indicators help districts like Marysville and other districts that are high performing. But then when you get into the urbans and the lower performing, you really don't have a way. So then they put value added in there, which helps those districts because, you can actually use it with your lower students. If you're working diligently, you can make improvements on it. So, it's kind of like, to me, like a four-ring circus, because there's factors that work for every kind of demographic of a school district. But then it ends up being nothing because you've got to try, all these different subpopulations of schools that... doesn't really mean anything. Right. And now Columbus Public, Marion, I've met very few, but they're at a higher standard.
So. Well, and the sad part about putting Bay there is they obviously didn't exceed value added, because if they did, they'd have been excellent with distinction, getting 6 indicators. Because they had 103.2 on a performance index, which tells me they have a lot of kids who passed that advanced, and everybody else failed. I mean, essentially, I don't know how you get such a high performance, besides the fact that they're very small.
Well, but it's got to be small.
They're very small.
Have classes, people in each area.
And if you have, as Greg said, less than 30 in your subgroup, they don't figure into your calculations.
And that may reflect the lower grades, because don't they fly the other kids over to the high school?
I know that they don't. Yeah. It's not always open from year to year. Putnam Bay is open. It's like 613.
They share them with Port Clinton.
But there's obviously others. Alliance City got 11 indicators, but was rated excellent. And I was thinking, the sad part is if all you looked at was that excellent, you'd say, well, they're a better district than we are. I mean, just if that's all you did is looked at that title, and they probably got a banner in the front of their building like we did, that says, we're an excellent school district, but we got less than half the indicators. We barely got over 90, and we made excellent. And it isn't a knock on any district as much as the system doesn't work for some situations. And it really, in our case this year, it as far as getting that rating, it didn't work very well for us. So that's all I have on the report card. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them. So a lot of other information on the report card. I mean, tons of different things. You're welcome. Obviously, welcome to tell me the state thing, or I can get you a full copy of it. But these are the pieces that most people look at. And like I said, until they don't change AYP quickly, it's not going to mean anything, because everyone is going to be in school improvement status.
Don't you lose federal funding if you don't meet AYP?
No. There are...
you have to send out letters to your public, which are confusing as heck because your building is excellent or excellent with distinction, but you haven't met AYP, so you have to send a letter out stating that they have the ability
to. The state says we're great, but the feds don't?
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
it's confusing.
And it gets different at the building level.
Yeah,
because at the building levels, it's school improvement status, and they're a Title I building, they have to offer public school choice.
Right.
And we actually had to send out a letter from Navin, an excellent with distinction building, and say, if you'd like to send your kid to another building. And you could actually, in some cases, identify a building.
And they met it here before.
Who could be in continuous improvement. But maybe maybe they met AYP. You could say, take your kid out of this excellent with distinction building and put them in this one, because they're obviously better because they met AYP.
And so they've been moved from effective last year to excellent with distinction this year. And we were so proud, but they still didn't move out of student improvement.
Now, is that based upon the special needs that are at the elementary schools, that not meeting the AYP?
Well, it's all the subgroups.
It's all the subgroups.
You can see here, AYP is reading and math. That's the only thing they take into consideration. It's IEP, it's students with disabilities mostly, that is why people don't make it. That's all
economically
disadvantaged. Navin, I believe, was economically disadvantaged.
Right.
The others were IEP that didn't make it. Nobody missed it in more than one. Well, that's how the district did not make it. Reading for students with disabilities. That was we made it math. We made it with the nine other subgroups, but we didn't make it with the students with disabilities. Any questions? Then I'll turn it over to Carla.
As he's doing that, one thing that, as you can see, the work that's involved with this is the data analysis and the work now to really drill it down to the buildings, to the teachers, to the individual students, both elementary and secondary. So there's all that work that's going on. But now also we have on top of that is the work that's coming along with Ohio's new comprehensive education plan. You could go to the next one, Greg. And it's all built around the whole idea of college and career ready, which you've heard in almost everything that comes out anymore. You all are aware that back in 2009, the state of Ohio joined 48 other states, two territories and D.C., in working on international benchmarking and looking at the school districts internationally who were high performing. And a decision was made that that entity would go together and put together revised content standards that would bring about a uniform, consistent content standards across the nation. A lot of concern is that it takes away local control. It does not. What it does is that it gives us a better defined idea of what all kids at these particular grade levels should know and be able to do. How we teach it and how our teachers perform are all based upon our local decisions to do that. Our curriculum mappings, our units of study, things like that. In June of 2010, Ohio adopted the two different things. They adopted the revised Ohio academic content standards in science and social studies, but they went then to adopt the Common Core standards that were developed by this consortium that was coordinated by the National Governors Association and, more importantly, the Council of Chief State School Officers. And so in reading and math, we have the National Common Core standards. In science and social studies, we have the state revised. The consortium is now working on the national science and social studies, which means in 2014 we'll have that to switch over to as well. And the reason that I'm throwing this all out to confuse you is that's where we're at right now. It's a state of flux like we haven't seen for a long, long time. And we're trying to help our teachers, our parents, our community, our administrators, everybody to work through this. After those standards were adopted in June, the state immediately began work on the model curriculum. The model curriculum is going to be a state web-based resource for teachers that has resources and lesson plans that are examples of how to interpret the standards, how to teach the standards. The standards will be more about less information to cover per grade level, but going deeper with that and building that progressive foundation from grade level to grade level. So the model curriculum has to be adopted by state law by March 2011.
Can I ask real quick?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a lot of differences between what we teach now and these new standards?
There are some, not a whole lot, but there are some significant, and you jump in too, especially with high school. We know that in the area of history, there is more, a bit more emphasis on American history. Fifth and sixth grade will now be taking a look at Eastern and Western Hemisphere. The format for the assessments are different. Instead of standards and really teaching to the indicator, we're teaching more of a broad base. So it's going to be strand, concept, theme, a content statement. So they're deeper, they're more broad. So it's really going to take a lot of work for us in terms of curriculum mapping, the model curriculum, and really helping folks understand what needs to be covered.
And then the test will be who invented the light, the traffic light.
Oh, probably. We hope not. So as soon as the model curriculum goes into effect 2011, they've already started work, as I said, on science and social studies at the Common Core level. And then they have started work now on the next generation of assessments. So how we're assessing now is going to look very different. We will still be testing with the current standards and assessing them on the Ohio Achievement and Ohio Graduation Test through 2014. But we have to be building in these newer standards, especially at the lower grade levels, because come 2014-15, those kids are going to be tested on the new curriculum. So we can't wait for all of this to come into effect. So we're going to be working with two different sets of standards, two different sets of assessments, two different sets of curriculum.
And so basically everybody from 8th grade on down is going to be impacted. Everybody currently at the high school, 9 through 12, is still going to go through and have the OGT. But it'll be that graduating class of 2015 that will have either an ACT-type test. The state still hasn't said, you know, if that's going to be our official test that we're going to have, and then they would have a series of end-of-course exams, and those would be in the, I call them the OGT areas, you know, your science, your social studies, your English language arts, and your math. And right now, the talk is that of those, there would be 8, and they would have to have whatever the state sets a certain score, and 6 out of 8 of those, in addition to an ACT. And the talk is they don't know yet if there would be a certain score. And then as well, they would have to have some kind of service learning project. So there's really three components to graduation for that class of 2015, the way it is now in Ohio Core. Anybody graduating from 9th grade on up right now only has two components. They have to meet their credits, and then they have to have a 400 or higher on each of those 5 areas on the OGT. So that's going to be a difference, you know, in tracking that and working that into the system. Another piece I wanted to mention is the syllabi. You know, we're doing that already with our courses, but that is going to be the focus at the high school. And if you go on and actually look at the whatever the Common Core standards and math and English language arts or science and social studies, you'll see that there are syllabi on there. But I do want to caution you with this, the state ones, the science and social studies, those are just suggested. It doesn't mean, you know, they're going to have your core ones, your physical science, your upper ninth grade, your biology, physics, you know, chemistry, but you can also add more just using that model so that you have a syllabi. Yes.
So at the high school now, if we have eighth graders coming in next year, and obviously if they have a history class that they share with 10th and 11th graders, are we no longer able to do that now since there's two sets of curriculum?
We're going to have to work that in. And there are quite a few crosswalks that are being developed right now. Matter of fact, social studies is one of the first ones that kind of the
hybrid education
and science is out. That kind of looks to see the comparison of the older standards with the new ones. And there are, you know, as Carla talked about, you know, there's some pieces like fifth and sixth is a radical change in social studies,
right.
You know, from looking at the hemispheres in the United States in the context of the world. But there really aren't that major. I think one of the bigger components is more of the English language arts. They have exemplary text on there, text complexity that we haven't really had before. And again, those are in the model, but it doesn't say that everybody has to read Catching the Rye or whatever. But that's just an example of a text that, you know, they want teachers to look at and have something in a comparable level. There's also a focus on not only, you know, the fiction, nonfiction texts, but looking at different types of genres, you know, looking at web pages and all those pieces. And then the assessment is also probably going to take on it if Race to the Top money, you know, comes to fruition. Well, I mean, it's here, but the state has got that as kind of one of their goals to make performance-based assessments, which is very labor-intensive, you know, training the teachers to get them because they would actually have to score it within the district.
Right.
It wouldn't be just like sending out our tests now, waiting 60 days. And, of course, with the new technology, they want to try to have it online where a student could take it, you know, either have a site at the school or take it on the phone, you know, all those different. So those are all projected pieces that would be in this.
We might add, too, is that Yvonne was asked last year to have the high school participate in field testing for algebra.
We've actually done that for now 3 years.
And Yvonne just found out they're not going to use those tests.
Because we thought that was going to be a logical, you know, progression, that we were going to do the Algebra 1, Algebra 2. And we only got that score
field
geometry.
Tested it. And
although they said, you know, hyperbole education, Stan Hefner, who's the head of the curriculum department, said that, you know, the results were good and they learned a lot about it. It's just not they're going to take those and now let us use those. So
as you can see, the work that needs to be accomplished in the district is always, always a lot. But these next few years are going to be absolutely crazy. So we have started to put things in place. Yvonne and I have met and talked that all of this work needs to really be facilitated or coordinated through our office, working in concert with Race to the Top team. With anybody else, you know, department chairs. Our department chairs are going to play a vital piece in this process. They will be asked to become the resident experts in their content areas for the standards, for how to roll them out, how we can help the staff take this on. And that's in addition to the duties that they already have. Our department chairs are responsible for oversight of our inventory. They're also responsible for ordering. And they have, in this capacity, every year, they have found ways to save more and more money. An example last year is the K-6 folks. We had 4 second grade classrooms to add, 2 kindergarten sections, and they still helped us save over $30,000. So those department chairs are the ones that are really helping us roll that work out. And as you can see, with 2 of us, and even with the Race to the Top transformation team, and a lot of the other teams that are going on, it has to be an orchestrated collaboration, a systems approach to what everything is coming, for everything that's coming our way. So transition is supposed to be completed the end of the 2014 school year, and all new standards, the new generations of tests, and all the MODA curriculum goes into place for 2014-2015, unless things change.
Okay, I got one more quick question that just takes a quick answer. A quick answer. Are we going to have to...
Why am I the only one you say
that? I don't know. Are we going to have to replace all of our textbooks...
Good question.
For this?
And that's kind of why we've held off on some... Matter of fact, today, Rich Fulton, who's the department chair, the math department, we just had that discussion this afternoon. He wanted to start looking at some things. He really likes them online because he's going to Columbus State this weekend. And I do think more the next generation is going to be more of the online because of the flexibility, but then that raises the whole issue of getting, you know, access to that for some students that don't have access to a computer.
I just really want to know, does this board need to be looking forward saying there's going to be a bubble in our expenditures in our permanent improvement to buy textbooks?
I will
in
let
the next
you know
years.
That part of our work with the department chairs is having them work very closely with Cindy. Cindy has agreed to come in and help them have a cursory understanding of the five-year forecast. But also, on top of that, she's also going to help them really become well-versed in what those implications are for textbook adoptions, for planning. So we're going to lay out a five-year plan that will say, by this time, we'll have enough information we can look at science materials. We can pull the committees together. We're already going to have our department chairs looking at, because the everyone out there is already scrambling to the standards. So they're starting to alter and bring in their new resources and whatever now. So we're going to have our department chairs start that preliminary look at. And then when we work with Cindy, we'll lay out a five-year curriculum plan that deals with the adoptions, and so we can spread it out. I will tell you right now, we're at K-6. I can't speak for high school, but we're way behind in science adoption.
Then my last question for maybe to Cindy would be, since everybody's going to be changing their textbooks, is there an opportunity for us to buy in with other districts at this point to possibly bulk, since everybody's going to have to change it, is there an opportunity there to do...
We're not going to have to change everything. No.
Because, for example, at the high school, our science tech, we've gotten those really good.
Okay.
They're pretty,
all right.
Yeah. We've bought a few with them.
Like our math adoption will not change.
You
except
couldn't afford to buy new for everybody.
I didn't think so. That's what I'm asking.
$100+ a pop for a textbook. There's no way.
It just raised a red flag for me when you said we're going to have to change curriculum.
Even if you wanted to, you couldn't.
And with the framework we use at K-6 for reading, we just keep adding to our multiple copies of text.
We're not even looking.
Yeah, that isn't even a big dollar adoption. We try to factor in 2,000 for the larger buildings each year to replenish and add to their book rooms. Okay. Smaller buildings, 1,700 to 1,500. So,
all right, cool. Thank you.
Okay, Yvonne.
Okay. Four slides.
If we keep asking you questions, it's gonna keep you here longer.
You may have read, along with all the changes that Carla was talking about with the curriculum, there's been the changes in the licensure structure for teachers. Actually, with House Bill 1 that 2009, Governor Strickland had kind of rolled out in his State of the State in January. You can see we have a resident educator license that is going to take effect next year. That's 2011-12. That is a four-year license. Currently, our new teachers to the profession have a two-year license, and then they complete their mentoring requirement for the first year, and then they're able to go for a five-year license. That's going to be different. And that four-year is supposed to be a program of constant mentoring with a mentor that's embedded with them, during that whole four-year piece. Then if they are successful at the end of that 4 years, then they go to a professional educator license, which is the standard five-year license. There are now two tiers above that somebody has been teaching for with this model, it'll be 9 years. If we piggyback on the past, it'd be 7 years because they had a two-year and then a five. If they've had 7 years to nine, then they could go to a senior professional educator license. And that requires a master's. And they've done away with, used to be within 10 years you had to have a master's. The state's done away with that because they feel that, aspiring educators are going to want to go towards that senior professional and we'll get a master's anyways. So that's no longer. So somebody technically could still teach without a master's and keep for the rest of their career their professional educator. Then if they want to go to the top license, that's a lead professional educator. And for that credential, again, these are five-year licenses, the senior professional or the lead professional. For that credential, they need to have either National Board Certification, which is a 10-year process, or they could have Master Teacher, which has been around for a while. That is decided in the district, but the state has all the forms and the rubrics that use to assess them. That's a five-year. But they would need that, and then they could also get a teacher endorsement. There's some places like Ohio Dominican, University of Cincinnati, I think Marion LSU, that has some programs where the teacher can actually go get that endorsement. But they have to have those to get that top license. the lead professional educator. And the next one is kind of just the transition resident educator program. The last year and this year were the transition years, and that meant going from the praxis where you actually had an out-of-district person come in and evaluate according to the praxis, which was an instrument. And last year, the state had us turn to this transition, and what it basically is taking the teacher standards, which are in here, and they're online, and they're in the different areas. There's, for example, there's six of them, or actually seven of them. The first standard is students, you know, knowing their students. Second one is content. Third one, assessment. Fourth one, instruction. Fifth is their learning environment, whether it's the school or the classroom. Standard six is collaboration and communication, you know, within their, either with the community members, their parents, their fellow staff members. And then seven is professional responsibility and growth. So there is a formula in here. Actually, it's like a criteria or rubric, we call it, where the teacher, the new teacher, has to actually assess themselves to see. And, of course, they're brand new to the profession, so they're not going to be at the proficient level in some of the areas. And then they would make a goal based on that. And that's what they meet with their mentor. And that's kind of the next slide, if you want to show. And this is a form. It's supposed to be copyrighted. And the state's charging us $25 for a pack of 25 of these.
We have to do it.
We have to, yeah. Although when they go to the training, although we do have to pay for the training, $85 for one day and $135 for 2 days. But when we go to that, they actually, the mentor, you know, the veteran teacher, gets a packet of those. And so far last year, I didn't have to buy any. But basically what it is a goal-setting piece based on those teacher standards that the mentor and the mentee or the resident educator have sat down and decided, okay, this is the area we want to work on. And what I'm doing is I'm having them, since there's seven standards, focus on each quarter two of them. So maybe they want to do, you know, since beginning of the year, student and the content, because they're new to that, and then they would focus on what areas they want to work on. And then the next on the slide, my last one, is kind of the cycle. And you can see that basically the core of it is examining that new teacher's practice, and then the collaborative log, which you just saw a picture of, the copyrighted collaborative log instrument, that is kind of driving the whole piece, where they actually, the mentor and they and our rule in the district is there to meet at least twice a week, and we pair them with someone, fortunately we've been lucky, within their building. I mean, last year we did have somebody that was ARC, so they had to travel to another building, but they're usually very accessible. Some of them actually teach next door, so they can meet far, you know, more than the two times. But then you can see that they do some reflection on the standards and then their goal setting. So it's kind of a recursive process that just keeps feeding. And it's a formative assessment process. So that's kind of the underpinnings of the resident educator. And then next year is just multiplying that 1 year times four. And this year, just like last year, people that complete this successfully, that's attending, we have monthly mentor meetings where we focus on different areas. For example, parent-teacher conference will be the next one, looking at the local report card, you know, some of those pieces that new teachers, not trying to overwhelm them, but just some of the basic pieces. So they attend those meetings, they complete the collaborative log piece, they meet with their mentor. If they're successful with that, then they would apply for their five-year license. Mr. Zimmerman signs it. This year, their mentor also will sign it, and they're able to apply then and get their five-year license.
One of the key things I want you to understand as a board is that the State Department once had folks that did all of this. They took it away. They came out and assessed, did the practice review with those individual teachers. They pulled that away, and now it's the responsibility of the district.
So that cost is really on our shoulders.
For the training and...
Well, the mentoring, you got to have time for the mentor, and you got to have all that kind of stuff.
There's just a lot more that has to be done here.
We used to be able to bring a trainer here at very minimal cost, and she could train 30 people, and they don't do that.
Yeah, the cynic in me sometimes comes out. I mean, there's a lot to do. I mean, if you take this times the number of staff members we have and the requirement for them to keep getting a license, I mean, there's just a lot going on.
Seems like it would be getting difficult to get hired on as a resident educator in districts if there's additional cost.
It's just there's you used to just sign this form and send it off, and the State Department did it all. But
this year we have
really
14. We have 14 new teachers, and you know they each have a mentor. So there's 14.
Yeah, but now the mentors for 4 years.
4 years, right.
So, I mean, there's just stuff we have to take on and do.
So, as you can see, a lot coming down the pipe over the next few years. And we're excited. It's going to be fun. It's going to be crazy at times, but we're really excited about it. And we just want to get the best, most efficient, effective plan in place so that we, our staff doesn't feel overwhelmed, that parents, and most of all our kids, don't feel overwhelmed. So we're going to make this work.
Nice and smooth, all right? Do you guys have any questions? No? I just want to make sure we send you out on a positive note since we beat you up over the fifth grade reading that there's an awful lot on that report card to be proud of.
I mean,
you folks, we are top to bottom, have done a tremendous job, and there's so much in there to be proud of.
There's a lot of data, too. I mean, we have just poured all this data, even on vacation.
So although there's obviously an area for improvement, there's so much that you can hang your hat on and be proud of it.
And please
really
know there's a lot for fifth grade to be proud about. They're great teachers, great kids. They're working really hard. We just need to figure out what in that transition.
Fifth grade's our transition year, too, which is a little more, you know, there's stuff going on there. You know, they're coming in from all the other buildings, and fifth grade is, you know, it's, so, you know, we're looking at lots of different
things. And Yvonne, one thing, too, we talked about is putting together, Yvonne and I sitting down and identifying every transition that would happen K through 12, whether it be social, academic, you know, moving from kindergarten to first grade is a huge transition. 4 to 5 is a huge, to middle school. And then looking at the different factors and form some hypotheses about stuff that, and really to add that to the things we're working with Greg on. So we're working hard.
Great. All right. Well, thank you for all that you guys do.
Thanks.
All right. That ends our 15-minute presentation by the curriculum department. You're done now. You're done.
We didn't get to present last year.
You made up for it. You're good.
There you go.
Thank you, ladies. And Greg, thank you.
Our token.
That's right. Next up, public participation. If anybody would like to talk to the board? Anything at all? Anything on your mind? All right.
Close it down.
All right. If not, we're going to move along. Next up, I know you all read both sets of minutes from our August 16th and our August 23rd meeting. If there were no corrections, questions, or whatnot, I need a motion to accept those, please.
So moved.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Yes. Mr. Lassiter?
Yes.
Mr. Mabee?
Yes.
Mr. Fraker?
Yes.
Mr. Friedman?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, Madam Treasurer.
What's this
mean?
First item is the expenditures. not a whole lot going on there. Statements, you got those. Approval of the credit card, just to go over that, the administrators do have fifth grade credit cards up to a certain amount so that they don't have to keep getting little purchase orders and all that good stuff. So those are minor items. And then I think the most important thing is just go over the appropriation measure. And I'm just going to highlight some of the things. The total page shows you a little bit the total available resources for all funds. It's over $75 million. So we have 66 of that appropriated for this current school year. The revenue, basic items, we're going to go general fund throughout. Any questions on that?
No. Okay. I'm looking at yours, so I didn't want to open mine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but I got no problem. Okay. General fund, the basic items are in there. Going through this last couple days, Thursday and Friday of last week, I can see there's going to be some changes in our revenue for general fund. But right now, we'll take care of that at a later date with the five-year forecast. restricted grants and aids needs to be updated, and probably our unrestricted grants and aids. So I'll look at that once we get to the 5-year forecast for October.
We have to approve it in October, correct?
We will be approving that in October, yes. Yes. So we'll have that. On the comparison by function, you'll notice that regular instruction and support services, the 2100 and 2200 support service area, if you add those two percentages together, you get 68.57% of the total expenditure in general fund goes directly to the kids. So those are the people that are touching our students every day of the week. So almost 70%. And so that's a good percentage. I don't think there's ever anything that's set by the state as far as what should be or what isn't or anything, but when you get to that point, you know that we're doing things that we need to do for our students. We are a little high on our salaries and fringes. Total salary and fringe percentage is 84.22. It's a little high, but it's not that far out of realm from every place else. So then we go into...
Well, that's what happens when you cut out the other stuff, right?
Yes. Exactly. That's
that percentage raises.
Yeah, I mean...
It always raises, exactly. Exactly. A few things that in regular instruction, and you're going to see this throughout. One question that Jeff had asked me about was STRS and SERS pickup. Why wasn't anything appropriated last year? Well, it probably was, but when I was putting everything together, I didn't have that information, so it's all within the STRS and SERS, so when you add them all together, it works out. So what happens when you take over from somebody else in the middle of the year, we all look at everything a little bit differently. The other big item this year, state has done away with an object called teaching aids, and nobody really can give you a good explanation of what a teaching aid is, so there might be a little bit in there this year on some of the functions. It's just things that were left over that were open as of the end of June. Last year we paid them in July or August, so that's all that's in there. But then the teaching aids, whatever was in there, that was added into the teaching supplies. They said it was things like manipulatives, and I said, well, isn't that a supply? If I can do a math, if I can have somebody do how many marshmallows are for a math project, which is what I see every now and then, that's a supply as far as I'm concerned. I can't say that it's a teaching aid. Yeah, it's an aid, but it's also a supply. So why do we need two line items? So we got rid of those. So that was a good area. I'm not going to go through everyone. The health services are, it's a little higher this year than what it has been, mainly just because we have some other areas or other people that we've had to add in there. We've had an extra contract with one of the companies. Support services changes.
Is that a nurse or something?
Nurses, occupational therapy.
IEPs.
Things that we didn't have, that we don't have, that we've had to add this year. One area.
Or add more of,
yeah. Support service changes. You'll see that in the classified salary, it went down by over $200,000. That's because we went back to what the state is saying on the new educational flow model and spending. We have to have those spending rules in place by next year. This is our transition year. So we've split everybody. If they were part-time in the office as an aide and part-time as a classroom aide, we took them out of the classroom and put them into the office area. So you'll see that the support service area went up, support service area went down, and office area went up. The one item that changes for us compared to what it had been in the board area is that of putting the legal services in there. Legally, the boards are responsible for the legal cost. You're telling us that we need to make sure that we're legal. So I moved it back into the legal fees into the board area. The executive administrative service area, that is the loss of one secretary. That's the difference there in that realm.
So
So the Board of Education, that jump, that huge jump.
That huge jump.
Is
we
just
moved,
legal
I moved,
fees?
Yeah, I moved that from the legal fees from the 2600 area, the business service area, to the legal, to the Board of Education. What's that one? There's nothing out. Outstanding in the fiscal service and then the support service, you'll see that the business area dropped because of the legal fees. So that's an area that dropped. There was a change in on the operations and maintenance area in the 423. We had a lot of little items being paid for out of PI that really should not have been paid out of PI because it really didn't, they didn't have a five-year life or they weren't over an item. They were just things that we probably ended up paying for them every year. And so I felt that it was better and use that PI area in a better way to have the things that last for 5 years and to give the maintenance department some repairs out of general fund because that's it just made sense for the way that things were going. Our fuel is high.
Now, are we, do we capitalize all that? Over 5 years?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we do on inventory.
All right.
Mm-hmm. The fuel, you'll see that it's higher, even more so than what we had appropriated last year for transportation, mainly because at the time we were looking at close to $3 a gallon, so it's better to have a little extra in there than not have enough in there. So that's why we put that in there. And then the support service area, we had to switch around some of the new objects for the data services, the website services, and then internet support. They just changed the places in which they were should be paid out of, so those were the changes there. So that mainly is, oh, and the one in academic, the 4100s are the extracurricular. We moved the department chairs, the curriculum, anything out of the curriculum that should have been there instead of the extracurricular, moved it into the curricular area that it should be. So that's the changes for those. They really weren't a group. They weren't an activity. They were part of the curriculum department. So it made sense to have that. So then you go into your different funds that took care of general fund. Any other any questions on the general fund areas that we have? Okay. We have bond retirement. Those are our bonds that we're paying on and receiving our tax revenue for those. Each year it's going to go down a little bit more, so which is good. Permanent improvement, and we've started looking at putting out a five-year forecast. We've talked, Larry and Mike and I met early August, talked about how are we going to spread this out for 5 years to make sure, because we want to make sure that we've got enough to pay our bonds in principal. So that's an area that we need to make sure that we've got enough money coming in to make sure that those are being paid, plus all the other needs that fund's taking care of between the technology.
Asphalt. Buses.
Absolutely.
Textbooks.
Yeah. Technology and all those areas. We want to make sure that we've got plenty in there to handle those.
Have you done that before, the five-year forecast for PI?
Yep.
What we haven't done, those scheduled, like, parking lots.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We've done that kind of a two-year look. We haven't done a five-year look at it. Right. So what we want to do is be more of a master plan towards that. Same with roofs, those kinds of things.
Roofs, boilers, anything like that.
Yeah,
that
get them on a schedule.
Get them on a schedule so that we can get them out and make sure that we've got where it needs to be done.
We're actually, it's probably what I'd call a three-year plan because we were looking here and then we're looking 2 years out. So. But it really needs to be out further than that because, you know, as we've worked with the city on the TIF and the dollars coming in on our PI, you know, we really have to pay attention to what they are and what they aren't.
And that's what
that and schedule the stuff in.
Mm-hmm. The building fund, that's what's left from that building fund, and can be used for Maple Street. I know Jeff had a question about architect and engineering fees. That's just a placeholder. That doesn't mean that we're there, that we're going to be looking at that, but just in case we do decide that we need to look at it, it's there and we can use it. So those are. Then you have food service. Our food service department is ending, if it goes the way it looks this year, a $400,000 balance at the end.
Ooh. Sorry, it's exciting.
It is. You see the last 2 years in fiscal year 10 and 11, last year and this year, we didn't have anything coming back, you know, prior year expenditures, any transfer of funds advanced back. So those are good.
Didn't I hear her say last month that they're going to be buying equipment this year?
Right.
Right.
Was that in here?
It's not in here. It's not in here right now.
We haven't called it out.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I haven't identified all.
Yeah.
Okay.
We haven't.
All right.
Yeah. And so at that point, once we do that, we'll look and see if that fund is appropriated at $2 million. If we need to increase it, we can at that point. I'll be bringing that back to the board.
Yeah, I think some smaller pieces of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Not on the big, right. She hasn't, you know, and if she doesn't, you know, get it for this year, we can look at it as far as for next year.
And that's going to need to be on a schedule also.
Yeah.
Now, we've never even been able to look at a schedule.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's all new.
Yeah, exactly. Having them run in the black is new.
So that's good. So then we go into some smaller ones. The trust fund is just a basic trust donated funds that are used for scholarships. Uniform school supplies, that's our workbooks, tech, and classroom fees and resale type things. The 018 are the principals and different buildings, public support school. The picture money can go in there, Pepsi can go in there, things like that. And they can use that for whatever they deem necessary.
Yeah, Tracy asked a question about that. I guess I didn't see the, about how allocated to each principal.
It's not allocated, basically. They give us a schedule of what they want, what they're going to do that this year, and we put it, just lump it all together.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah, it's all lumped together.
Gotcha.
The 019 is that fund that we approved back in.
They pay for awards.
Yeah.
Some student awards out of there, staff awards.
Right.
They, you know, for retreats, if they have any meetings that they
meeting
have.
Expenses.
It just kind of goes, a lot of the CIP things, the training of the staff, will come out of the 018.
Gotcha. Yeah.
The 019 is that the other grants that have been in general fund. I know I'm gonna, we keep finding, everybody goes, well, I had this grant last year. Oh, yeah, it's still in general fund. So we're moving those out slowly as we get them. And then if we get any new ones, we're putting those in there. And each one will have their own special cost center as a grant so that we can track those grants more specifically. The big one is the Nestle's grant, and it was all over the place, so it just makes sense to make it easier for everybody. They've got a specific grant, they've got their expenditure account numbers out of it, and we don't have, and somebody doesn't say, well, what's it for? And I'm like, I don't know. And it took quite a bit last year to even find some of them.
It's a $5,000 grant.
Yeah.
It's not a big one.
Yeah, it's 5,000, but it's like every year, you know, and they can carry it forward. And so it was one of those. But 020 fund is our SAC. And as you see, it's still holding its own. And hopefully with some of the things that are trying, it'll stay above board. And also that's one area that we're going to have to double check. And I know Nichelle's doing a great job trying and making sure that she stays within her means and all on that. So those look good. The 026, our Section 125 flexible spending plan, money goes in there and it gets paid out of that account.
Is the new healthcare law that passed, is that going to affect those 125 funds?
It will not affect the funds itself. It'll affect how the employees use those funds. They won't be able to use over the counter.
So is that going to potentially drop that?
It should. It probably will. I mean, some of them, if they think they're going to have some extras, because you aren't going to be able to buy your Band-Aids, your Advil, and those kind of things at the end of the year if you haven't spent everything.
Well, you should see the Band-Aids we went through.
I know.
This could be an issue.
Uh-oh. I'll buy extra for you.
Need them.
Then student activities, the 200s, those are the funds that the students are the treasurer and class officers and those type of things. And then the 300s are managed by the staff, but yes, they'll do things for the students. That one, the big ones in that are your athletics. So that's where the athletic is. And then we've got a 401 auxiliary service fund. That's Trinity Lutheran. That's money that comes in from the state. And they are a chartered school, so we are the fiscal agent for them. And then it comes out, and it's a biennium amount. This year they received extra money from last fiscal year in this year, so we'll see how much more, and it's based on their ADM. The EMIS funds, I've got $9,500 in there. I'm not sure if we're even going to get any this year, but just in case we do, so that it's in there. Usually we don't get it until November, December. That's to pay for all the expense to put everything through to make sure that our testing scores, our personnel, everything that goes into that report card is correct. And if it only costs us $9,500, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. The data communications, the 451 is the amount that we get for being part of school computer centers, and that's for fiber money coming in, and then it goes back out. It's part of the Third Frontier money in and out. The miscellaneous state grant is the core. It's curriculum based off things like that. And so those are the state ones. The 500 funds are all our federal programs, and as you see, they go up and down and all over the place. 516, our special ed, that also includes all our ARRA funds from last year to this year. And next year probably won't have ARRA, so we'll go back to about 800,000. So we'll see what happens with that. Stimulus fund, those are the amounts that we're getting this year for the stimulus money and to pay staff for that. Technology, the 532.3 Title IID, we're still getting a little bit of money there. It's not very much, but we have gotten some.
$1,500.
Yeah.
Not too much time talking about that, all right.
Yeah. The school. Well, the next two are the same way. School improvement, the Title IA, and then Title I Sub G. Those are both school improvement funds that you've got to go through all kinds of hoops and have to make sure that you spend them within the right time, and then you can get so much, and then if you thought you had carryover, but you really don't have carryover, you got to spend it and appropriate it by the end of this month, and so we're going through all kinds of their hoops for that. Title III immigrant, that's the same one. It's just one of those that we got fluky one year, got it. Title I, that also includes our ARRA Title I money, so, but it's not as much as what we got in this 516. Drug-free school grant, you'll see that's down to $73.11 this year.
I'd like to see in your plan how we're going to spend that money.
We'll be able to expand the plan quite a bit. Yeah.
This fund is gone after, I think, this year. Yeah. This year. This is the last year for this grant. So, you know, they drug-free schools, but they have, it's a mandate at the federal level, but that's, there you see our money's going away. Mm. Preschool handicap grant is our preschool. We pay one teacher, 1-8 out of that, and that's the preschool handicap grant that we have for those little ones. Title IIA is our improving teacher quality. We have used that for grades 1-3. We have two teachers paid out of that grant to make our class sizes a little smaller in the first and third grade. And then our miscellaneous grant, federal grants, are just small ones that we just got. So not a whole lot within those grants.
Well, that certainly was an exciting walk through appropriations.
And then we've got a new, another new club, so that's it.
Who are we going to beat with it?
Oh,
different kind of club.
Oh,
different
kind of
club. Different club.
Hey. That's my report, sir.
Anybody have any questions on items A through E of the treasurer's report?
We're not approving the appropriations right now. That's next month, right?
No, appropriations are tonight.
Tonight.
Oh, really? So, okay. I guess I would have liked if I had more time to look through this. Because this is for the year, right? Remainder of the year?
Yep, for this year.
When's it due?
The end of this month. 30.
Is there something in particular you wanted to do?
No, I guess I would have liked to prepare for the temporary approach to appropriations and spend some time looking at it with comparison to the 5-year forecast. And
we did get it on Tuesday, although that's not.
Did we get this whole thing on Tuesday?
Yeah.
Did we?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, that might be the issue, because all I saw was this first page.
She sent it out as a separate one to our district email.
Got it.
Did you check that?
Well, out of town, so I had a hard time with that. Yeah. Okay.
Are we okay moving forward? I mean, we kind of have to at this point.
Sure.
Yep.
All right. Well, if there are no other questions, concerns, or issues, I need a motion to accept A through E on the treasurer's report, please.
So moved.
Second. Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Glassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Fraker.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Item 8. This is a resolution. Item 9. I'm sorry. I don't want to go back through and read all the...
What?
Item 8. Is it?
Yeah, the rates are based on...
This item. This is still yours.
Okay.
Have at it.
All right, item 8, whoever wants it.
These are the rates that were approved by the Budget Commission. I believe they were in your board packet. And they are just basically the voted rates. And it's just one of those things that you have to do. And
we do it every year, do we not?
Every year, yes.
Any questions on that?
Who is the Budget Commission?
Budget Commission is the county auditor, county treasurer.
And one commissioner.
They set the rates for it.
Prosecuting attorney.
Prosecuting attorney. Yeah.
Different commission.
Yeah. That's Board of Revisions.
Any other questions?
I'm good.
All right. Then I move we accept the resolution to accept the amounts and rates as determined by the Budget Commission.
Second.
Move in second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Fraker.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Now, just technically what they do is, you know, if you have a huge carryover, they can lower the amount of millage that you're collecting. If you're collecting it at your estimate towards that levy is correct, or in their opinion is correct, they continue the rates, and but they have to do it every year by law.
Yes.
So,
by law.
But they toy with some districts that have a huge carryover with lowering the amount that their publics are being charged for their levies. So
that's not us.
That is not us.
No.
But that happens.
Unless we're reading a different forecast.
Exactly. 9. Resolution to waive body max index screening. The state law now, in effect, requires the body mass index be screened unless you waive out. So, I mean, it was a courageous and neutral stand by the legislature, I think, to pass it and then leave it up to the locals whether they want to participate or not.
We don't want to participate. We collect, we do body mass index in a lot of our physical classes. We do. But it's an individual issue, we believe. It doesn't belong on your grade card or your report card, your state report card. It doesn't belong in anybody's statistical information out there. So we would like for the Board of Education to waive it, waive the requirement.
I couldn't agree more.
Intrusive legislation.
Right, so I need a motion to accept that, please.
So moved.
Second.
Move and second. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter?
Yes.
Mr. Mabee?
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg?
Yes.
Mr. Fraker?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
10, consider a lease agreement with Columbus State. As you know, Columbus State has residents at our high school, provide adult education, and we have a two-year lease agreement, which was sent out to you essentially the same, except we've asked for some revisions on smoking, not on our campus.
Right, because we're a smoke-free campus.
Right. So we had smoking in, they had smoking not inside the building, but could smoke on, you know, there wasn't, it was silent on whether they could smoke outside the building. So we made it. So it's
not silent?
Not silent.
Unsilent?
Yeah, yeah, unsilent. So, but besides that, you know, I think it's a good arrangement for our community to have presence here.
I agree.
Oh, yeah.
Any questions? So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mabee?
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg?
Yes.
Mr. Fraser?
Yes.
Mrs. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Item 11 is a proposed district plan for state assessment, administration, and security, something we've had in place for a long time, but just now we have to prove that we have it in place and that our teachers are being trained in the model. So we're actually adding it to our online training program. It's one of these that you just look at and you say, really? Should we have to jump this hoop? Well, we are. But we have to jump this hoop. So we have a proposed plan. Again, it is our plan. It's what we've done for a long time. We just have to now send it on that you've approved it as a local board, and we send it on to the State Department.
Any questions? I need a motion to accept that, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Freudenberg?
Yes.
Mrs. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter?
Yes.
Mr. Mabee?
Yes.
Mr. Fraker?
Yes. Okay, motion carries.
Item 12, I sent out some information a couple weeks ago about an issue that we're having, and this is directly is at that issue, and that's amend the substitute and hourly rate schedule for our health nurses, or what we call health consultants. The substitute rate that we had was $1, yeah, it was $11.25 an hour, and when we just couldn't get any, we just can't get subs, and right now we're in a critical need for some subs. What we're finding is that the range of what folks are working for out there has moved well past $1.25 an hour into the range that we feel comfortable with. It is $21 an hour, and we would like to recommend that rate for our health consultant substitute position move to that rate.
How come we haven't been closer to that?
We just haven't had an issue.
I don't know how you get a sub in to nurse for that rate.
We could.
What sort of education
they have to be
substitutes?
They have to be an RN. They have an RN or an LPN.
That doesn't adjust at all for experience or anything. It's just a position.
It's just a position on a substitute basis. We just...
That's a huge gap.
It does move it, but it's the market. I mean, that's what we're finding.
Well, I don't have a problem with the market. I'm just saying why we were at 11.25.
it should have been moved, but we didn't. Again, that's a tribute not only to our staff, I think. We just haven't had an issue. But now, this year we have an issue for a couple different reasons. We have some health issues going on within our staff, and the new requirement that mandates who can give certain medications.
Sorry.
It's become more restrictive. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have that person on board. We've been able to train some of our office staff to do some things that they can no longer do. So it is what it is.
I can't believe you went that long at that rate.
No, that's a lot of it. That's
what I'm saying.
Maybe we should buy him some Zycam.
Yeah. Anybody have any other questions? Not. I move that we accept the substitute and hourly rate schedule.
Second.
Move and second. Call, please.
Mr. Mabee?
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg?
Yes.
Mr. Fraker?
Yes.
Mrs. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Ellen Truck thanks you a bunch for that.
Get us some nurses.
Item 13, staff resignations. Accept the four resignations that are there. It's my recommendation that you, those are presented, and I would want those to be accepted.
So moved.
Second.
Move and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mabee?
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg?
Yes.
Mr. Fraker?
Yes.
Mrs. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter?
Yes.
Okay. One of those I call out is Peggy Bailey. That's Ellen Trock's secretary. Peggy has been with the district since, I think, we had a little fewer than 300 IEP kids in the district. We're now over 900 IEP kids. She's still the only secretary in the special ed department. So replacing her is going to be interesting. She just leaves with a lot of knowledge, and she will be hard to replace. 14, leave of absence. Is my recommendation that you accept A and B there as leave of absence, unpaid leave of absence.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Fraker?
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg?
Yes.
Mr. Mabee?
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter?
Yes.
Mrs. Greer?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Item 15 is employee district staff. I recommend that the following individuals be approved on one-year limited contracts for the 2010-11 school year. Again, as I did in my notes, I'm going to call out F, Debbie Ellis, gifted services coordinator for grades 7 through 12, primarily high school. We've gone from a full-time coordinator to part-time. Deb won't be able to cover all the duties, so we're still kind of figuring out what we're going to do there, but I'm probably going to have to fill that with a little more part-time, but not a lot more, I don't think. But we've gone from full-time to kind of a one day a week, maybe a little more than that for her.
Is it me, or have we seen a lot of movement in our latchkey program for people-wise?
Oh, that's latchkey. Yeah. I can never remember what SAC is. Okay.
Yeah. So you don't think by employing Deb Ellis that that's going to cover what we need?
No. It won't. Totally. We're messing.
But you don't think we need a full-time?
Yeah, well, maybe. Not right at the moment. Still trying to figure that out, actually. The reason why is Donna Ball took on the elementary portion of gifted. So I don't need a full to do 7-12. But I need probably more than what Deb can do for us. Debbie was full-time gifted coordinator at Bell Fountain for years. She's retired, and now she's willing to do some, but not. She doesn't want to take it all in again. Or even close to that. So I'm probably still going to need a little bit of help. She's helping us with some of the things at the high school level, the administration and some of our staff at the high school taking on some of the other duties. Where I'm going to probably be a little short is middle school, trying to figure out how we can get, making sure the kids are identified there primarily. And then I don't worry so much about the service at the middle school, because I think the service model's in place. It's just making sure our identification of the kids is there and being able to meet with parents.
So if we approve this contract or hiring Deb Ellis, will that only be through next June? Or
yes, through next June.
The only reason I have an issue with it is because it's a rehire, even though she wasn't here at this particular district before.
Well, yeah, I do say what you want, but it's hard to find the expertise there in that particular level.
On a part-time basis.
And we're trying to do it in a in a way that makes some sense, not only for our service model, but also financially. You know, if I could have gone out and advertised for a full-time person, I'm not sure there aren't a whole bunch of those out there anyway. So the odds of getting somebody was going to be slim anyway, and that's the reason why we did what we ended up doing. This is a heck of a lot. I think she brings an incredible amount of experience. Feel whatever you want about retire or be hired. I mean, she just brings tremendous amount of experience.
I'm sure she does.
I mean, go ahead. I mean, I have issues about retiree hire as well. I just think it's bad for the overall system, the STAR system, the pension system. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are unemployed right now. And you know,
well, not in this area, not in that particular.
Well, that's where I got to trust you on that. But.
I mean, really, you know, again, we'll go back to retire or hire and kind of the ongoing theme of this previous board anyways. I mean, is that a position that the...
I would fill. I need somebody
that we couldn't get typically off the street, someone that you know, is kind of a specialized kind of thing that we couldn't just go out and hire someone for. Right. Would be my inclination from what I understand. It's just not someone you just walk out and get at a part-time rate. For that,
yeah.
I mean, because we're not hiring full time. I mean, $16,000 a year. Was that even falling, or she? I mean, is that just is she like an independent contractor, or is
no?
That, or
no,
is she actually
we actually brought her through payroll so that she could count as.
Yeah,
is she part of the? Is she part of the MEA? I mean, is she a certified teacher, or is that?
She would be a coordinator. She would be a teacher through the teachers. Yeah.
Okay. Does she gain benefits? Is she not enough for benefits? I mean, so
no,
it's just strictly
no salary.
It's nothing. It's
nothing.
Just salary.
No anything.
But see, I mean, going to that issue though, there's like 20,000 retiree hires just in the state of Ohio, and you think about those jobs being taken out of the pool. Not to mention that those are people that would otherwise be paying into a failing retirement system, and I'm sure every one of those they could justify. Well,
sure,
you know. So I guess, you know, I had a similar vote in High Point, and the case was made, but I'm just against the retiree hire. And I totally respect your position and the rest of the board's position on
sure.
That,
no, that's fair enough. Is there any other comment, question on that? I'm going to throw it up for a vote. If there's no more, then. So moved.
Well,
second.
Could we? I'm sure. Sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Could we break this one out? Because I intend to vote no on that. And okay. If it's part of the list, then.
Let's make that. I mean, I kind of want to slide a number in there, but...
Well, just vote on A through E.
Okay, we'll vote on A through E.
15 F by itself.
Okay, all right. Then I move we accept 15 A through E separately. Hold on here. Now I got to make a bunch of lines. This might be more work than I hired on for right here.
And the object of this from here on F, though, Larry, would be to... eventually identify someone,
yeah.
Or
well,
right now it's like
yeah. What I don't know, Roy, and really, I need this year to kind of work it out. We tried to take a look at what we were doing. The elementary staff, elementary administrators, and elementary staff felt as though they could handle their portion of the gifted and Donna Ball. The elementary principal at Raymond felt as a past. Coordinator of gifted, she was willing to take that on. She has a smaller elementary. She was willing to take on more of that role and assist the other principals in running and identifying all those kids. Well, when that occurred, and they did it for a couple different reasons. They felt they could do it well, and they knew as though that could help save a position financially. You know, and so that's the reason why they did it. When they did that, then it kind of then I had to look at what the duties were at 7 through 12. Mm-hmm. I still have duties. I still have to identify those kids. We don't have to serve them. I mean, by law, we don't have to serve them. We have to identify them. But you have to get them into EMIS. You have to, you know, mm-hmm. and then you have to work with staff on, you know, once they're identified, then there are, I think, ethically, there are some things you have to do with your staff and the kids and the families and those kinds of things and working with those gifted kids. Mm-hmm. So Deb's going to do primarily high school stuff because that's kind of her expertise. She's going to work on dual enrollment, which she had an incredible dual enrollment program at Bell Fountain where kids got high school credit and college credit at the same time for taking high school courses. She's doing that and as well as flex credit, taking on and overseeing our AP courses and assisting Matt in that. Mm-hmm. What I don't have, I need a little more service at the middle school, making sure that those kids, because Donna's taking up through 6, making sure our 7th and 8th graders have not only identifying them, but we identify service and can meet with some parents there. Kathy's is primarily, she feels comfortable taking on most of that, but it's identification and making sure the kids are in EMIS and we're getting credit for it and all those mm-hmm. kinds of things that I worry about there. So that's kind of.
So we identify these kids, but they're not necessarily.
You don't have to serve them by law.
Mm-hmm. Just have to.
That's a crazy statement.
You just have to say, yep, you get it. Yeah. Congratulations.
Well, it's like, you know, requiring kindergarten, but.
I know.
You know, you don't have to go to kindergarten to go to first grade. Well, kindergarten's not required, but you have to have it to go to first grade in the state of Washington.
Is there anybody internally that can move
no.
into the coordinator position
no.
that you could backfill?
No. No. Not to this level.
Right, sure.
I mean, I'd have to replace them. It's going to cost you more money.
So I'm just looking at it as if this is a fill for right now. Because if she's retired, evidently she's not planning on working a lot more years.
Not,
I mean,
she's
coming in
to help us out here, more
correct.
Or less, and then a transition of maybe hopefully training someone.
Correct.
If
yeah.
if that were a full-time position, would she be hiring on for that job?
No.
All right. Well, let's take A through E then.
She's interested in about 40 days, 40 to 50 to 60 days a year, depending on where that flexes out.
All right, I move we accept A through M. I'm sorry, A through E. M is my motion. I need a second, please.
So
moved. No, I move.
Second.
I just need a second.
Second.
Moving second. Roll call, please.
I did it before, and I didn't even want to get into that.
I know.
I have to get that back out of there.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Fraker.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Well, then on the issue of F, okay, so strictly we're just going to go on F.
Yep.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of where you are.
Yeah. So moved.
Second.
Oh, again. Moved and seconded. Roll call, please. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Mason.
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Fraker?
Yes.
Mrs. Greer?
No.
Mr. Lassiter?
No. I do want to make it clear it's not against that position.
No.
I think it's a valuable position. It's just the retiree hire.
How would you suggest we would fill that position? Hire
well,
someone
I'd
full-time?
Start by posting it probably or look internally. I don't know. I'm not. I really don't want to get into too much of it. I just think that if retiree hire is off the table, we would find a way.
Okay.
That's why I looked at it as a transition. Right. To train someone, it's better to have an experienced person there to train than it would be a non-experienced.
I understand that. I do respect that.
All right. Well, motion carries then. 3-2.
Yeah, sure.
All right. 16.
16 is employee student district staff employee. Student light and sound technicians effective for the 10-11 school year and the work transition kids for the 10-11 year. The sound and light kids run the auditorium for a lot of the functions that are over there. Just we have an adult supervisor, but they're trained to do that for all the nights and weekends and stuff that are going on in there. something we've done for a long time. You know, work transition kids are typically IEP kids that that are in our transition program, and they have some work that we supervise.
If there's no questions, I need a motion to accept that, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Fraker.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Item 17, supplemental contracts. Outlined below are specific recommendations related to employment for certificated and non-certificated individuals. And there's a list.
I see those 14 mentors on there for our 14 new teachers.
Are those all new positions?
What?
Those new supplemental, the mentor positions?
No.
Okay. New as in?
New as
if we didn't have 14 new
last year.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you meant.
Well, you've had positions.
That's how I mean.
It actually depends on the number of people that you
there
have.
There were six last year. Yeah.
They just increased because of God.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it relates to the number of
supplemental
new teachers.
Mentors
right.
Has been around for
A long time. Since actually the State Department brought it down to us and required the mentoring. I will add, initially, they paid for it.
Of course they did.
They required it.
Okay.
They still require it.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions on those?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Trying to get home, bro.
No. Actually, don't matter now.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
18 substitutes and home instructors. Outlined below are substitutes and home instructors recommended for employment for the 10-11 school year on an as-needed basis.
So moved?
Second.
Okay. Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Fraker.
Yes.
Square.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
19, Big Brother, Big Sister Lunch Buddy Mentoring Program. We've done this for the last several years. This is something through the Big Brother, Big Sister program, and we'll nice run at Edgewood, Maven, and at Northwood.
So moved.
Second. Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Yes.
Screw.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Item 20, district volunteers, and you also have those on the agenda. You have a long list of parent volunteers primarily. Some are grandparents, uncles, and so on. But all these folks are either volunteered, they all have to run through the fingerprints, yada, 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 and be bad background checks and all those kinds of things.
You have to answer the questions, crop.
Yeah, exactly. You have to remember. You have to know what M and F is.
That's right.
It's not misdemeanor and felony.
It's not male or female. It's a misdemeanor and felony. So when you fill out that thing, don't put down, like, if you're female, don't check the F.
Don't check
it's
the
a felony.
That's a phone call. As some folks do.
Yes, she did.
Oh, boy.
I need a motion to accept the volunteers, then, please.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mr. Fraker.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
I have 21. Again, there's one on the agenda. Recognizing the student teachers and folks that are doing the shadowing experiences in the district.
Experiences. So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Maybe.
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Fraker.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Item 22 are fundraisers. There are two of them there. One for Edgewood, one for Creekview.
Don't pull the trigger on that one, Roy. It's not donations. No, it's fundraisers.
It's
all right?
Fundraiser.
Just relax. You got that? So moved.
Second.
Moved in second. Roll call.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Ms. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Ms. Fraker.
Yes.
Ms. Greer. Yes.
Laughter.
Yes. Okay, motion carries.
Donations to the district.
So moved.
Second.
All right. Moved in second, I guess. Roll call, please.
Mr. Fraker.
Yes.
Mr. Freudenberg.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Ms. Greer.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Item 24, and again, You tell me. I can send this to you, and then we can talk about it next meeting if you would prefer, given how long you've been here already, because it's going to take me a little bit.
I would kind of like to look at it first in case you have questions.
All right. That's fine.
I'll check both emails.
Yeah.
Three.
Can you start me up?
And I just wanted to touch on that real quick. If you guys are going to be out of town, you can't get to your district email.
I got to it most of the week. I didn't get anything. I saw it in my personal.
I'm just saying, if you happen to be in a place where you can't get it, just let
I can only get it at night when I'm out of town. I saw it in my
this window.
Yeah.
Well, I saw it in my personal, so I just assumed that was everything.
Okay. I just want to make sure everybody gets what they need and so on.
Right.
All
right.
And lastly, I'm going to open up for any questions or last thoughts from the board. I'll go around the table, Mr. Lasser.
You want this?
Maybe we can be consistent as to where we send it.
Do you want this tonight or not?
No. We want to know. Send it to
you
us.
See it first.
Yes.
Oh, that's all right. Oh. Okay.
Send it.
It's not what you meant right there.
Yeah, send it. We're
all right.
Yeah,
send it. You're good.
No moss.
Yeah. I'll send this to you.
Shut down, man.
I can take a hard copy.
Take a hard copy and a soft copy. I'll take the hard copy.
I can send it to you. I'll read that. Had a hard copy available.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I don't read the soft copy long before I read the hard copy.
It gives me something to do while I'm watching Days of Our Lives. Eating bonbons.
You do not.
I wouldn't count on it. I'm not throwing anything out. I can tell you that right
now. Well, just let me know. And if you want additional data.
But you're going to go over that at our next meeting, right? All right.
On the back, the last page, the last two pages.
I knew we were going to.
This will give you a first look. Well, it's going to be confusing, actually, as you go through this. This is a new look at the model, the funding stream model. This tells you what's funded, supposedly, in the model or will be.
Oh, for evidence-based, I think.
Evidence-based.
Oh, EBM.
Again, if you take a look at what that is, it's funding us for about 500 positions, of which we have 385, but we also have 163 non-funded positions, like the entire central office, except for Cindy and I.
Yeah.
We get funded for a superintendent and a treasurer, but no support. Payroll's out. You know, no, you don't get funded for any of that stuff.
Think how much money we'd save if we didn't have
operations,
payroll.
You know, maintenance.
So foolish if you don't fund payroll.
Custodial, any of that. You don't get funded for those. So those are local decisions. The issue I'm bringing up is that if you look at the number of teachers, the core teachers, they require us that we have 234 core teachers, of which we have 191.
That they fund for.
If you add in non-funded, what we call non-core, which would be your technology, your business department, your vocational, and those kinds of things, those are what they call non-core. They don't fund you for those.
Uh-huh.
So as you start moving around staff, as you start, you know, it's been a real issue as we've tried to match where we are with the model versus what the auditor in the performance audit said. It's kind of hard to mix and match because if you reduce 24 positions from just your non-funded, you're going to eliminate whole non-funded programs, but you still have to add core teachers if the model stays in effect.
We'll know.
That's what this last page is, the last two pages, actually. So you might have some questions on that. Look through that data. It's interesting stuff. We've been wading through it, trying to, as I said, you know, I don't know whether it was last month, the month before, you know, a lot of this is brand new. We're learning it as we go, and the definitions of some of these, we still don't know. we honest to God don't know what building manager is, for instance, or resources. We have resources for operations. We just get money, but no position. Family community liaison, whatever that is. You know, maybe that could be your vocational ed teacher or ag teacher. I don't know. Or you could fund it through there or not. I don't
that
know.
Makes sense.
But it's look at it. Questions, holler at me.
Alright.
I'll save you some night time here.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Thoughts.
Seriously.
Go ahead, please.
Me not getting that is completely my fault, so I'm not making this point, but we did talk about trying to get our emails on district email, and I know Roy and John.
Hey,
you guys don't. Well, you guys
I'm
don't.
There, man.
Oh, are you there now?
I'm there.
Okay. Well, cool. I'm just sitting there thinking. The idea of getting our board material and our personal email goes against one of the reasons why we got district email, and that is we don't want to open up our companies to public information requests. So, if we can get our board material sent to our district email, I think that would be.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. Is that it's being sent to your personal?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Looking at it,
we're
in transition with that.
Sure.
Because I've got two folks, actually three folks, kind of doing the board agenda now instead of Barb. So, all right.
Yeah.
Well, that's easy to correct. Yeah. I did not know that. So we'll get that out on your district.
Yeah, because it jams up my inbox every month, and then they get bounced back. Yeah. Could you send it? Either split it or send it to my district email account.
All right,
I get that.
My inbox only has 700, 800
okay.
Inbox mail has never been read, but
is that
my district would do the same?
Ms. Gruno, Ms. Fraker, anything before we close?
No.
All right, Ms. Freudenberg.
Yeah. Back to what Doug's saying, if you send it over there, you need to tell me in my real inbox that I have something over there.
I'll text you.
You know what I'm saying? You got to tell me.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I've got seven emails.
Me too. Yeah.
I got seven emails, okay? Because I got three different businesses and all kinds of stuff. And I mean,
oh, you can copy.
I can't find
them. If you tell me you want it both places and you're not an issue with that, I can do that.
I don't, but he might.
I don't want to get us in any trouble if this stuff comes across. Oh, no, I'm fine with it coming across this thing. You know. But, no, because I got it. That's fine.
Okay.
I don't.
You guys,
but if there was a rule that said I had to pick it up there,
you guys
then you need to
communicate
notify
with Jeff which email you want.
Their district email would be fine.
District email would be fine. All right.
No, I'm telling them to communicate with me. The district.
Okay.
So, all right. Any other parting shots? Anybody else? Not, I move we adjourn then.
Second.
Moving second, roll call, please.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Yes.
Freudenberg. Mr. Fraker.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lassner.
Yes.
Okay, we are adjourned. Great meeting tonight.
Thank you.
Doug. Remember,
great meeting.
I had to re-roll it.
Yes.
Oh, we talked about it the whole time.
I don't care.
You ladies stuck it out for the whole deal. You talk. Fun. Really?
My grandson had just smashed it. I didn't know I was telling you about that.
Good night. Be careful out there now.
I'm telling you about it. We're looking.
I just thought you'd like to see some blood in your
arm. I had to take some children from the audience.
How are you, young lady?
His mother couldn't stay in the room with him.
Yes.
They had to remove
I will sign.
Mail.
I, you know, I
so
signed.
So up underneath of it.
We got more stuff
on
back
on.
Wow.
But I understand it. But now, what you the reason why they
had it also comes to
some gory bloody apples, and I didn't realize it.
Ooh,
I've read it.
Yeah,
okay. Just go down to children's
television.
I didn't print it out.
I don't live here, but somebody.
Because it got in the bed. And then when it flipped up, it came up the back door. The door, the front door was flat.
This way, when it comes
in,
it just
popped
in
out.
So
they try to get it back in, but the nurse is like a horse. They couldn't crash it. They numbered it in here.
And also, the...
I mean, it was...
They told you, I'm just my mom's
happy. Then after she took the...
Send us.
This...
tray.
One more cookie for the tray.
Dude, you're grossing.
This is
and
the
then,
cookie
and then stitched inside, but she said, I have to replace that nail in there to get it fed to take hold. Because
yeah. All the
kids,
times you walk to the
door
are listed right. Here separately.
So
what are you doing?
But now it's gone.
And that is for
this. So it's grown back. She had to take out that nail.
It was nuts. I was thinking about it.
Longer because of
it. You were dancing around the issue, weren't you?
I was giving serious because
you could never do that now.
I figured, you know,
well, you know, you're really doing
it.
I don't know, it doesn't bother me.
I can watch it, but I could never do that.
I was an education major.
Yeah, I thought maybe you would be a music major.
But I didn't mean to leave this that night. Just,
but I felt bad.
Are you a woodwind specialist?
Well, I don't. You know, but I got all kinds
of. My daughter is five. It doesn't help her either.
Mine too. They like to have a woodwind specialist to stop by and help them at times because it
was a trip
around. Really?
Yeah.
Great.
Oh,
see, I think
all
they should just trade some people in
shot.
Right.
There you go.
Because I really
I can do that. All dad, you know, he's
we are all
drafts
except
you know, he's in the army, so.